The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. 4 minutes past nine. It's Tuesday, the 25th of July, 2023, and you welcome along to another edition of your 9 till noon show. And we're here to keep you entertained, hopefully, and informed over the next 3 hours. Plenty lined up, as you can imagine. It's Tuesday, so we've got the latest appeals and information. You hear them first here before anyone else on Community Garda information. We're going to be talking about the future of democracy. We're going to be getting updates on those new IVF rules that are coming in, or the new availability of it. We're going to hear an appeal as it relates to that missing persons, friends and family going through an awful time at the moment. There's that and so much more besides. So we want you involved in the conversation or starting it, sharing your information with us. 086 60 25000, WhatsApps and texts. If you want to text or WhatsApp us from outside the Republic, it's 0035386 60 25000. Maybe you're caught up in some of these extreme weather events overseas and you want to let us know what it's like there. Is it exactly as it's being portrayed? Is it worse? Is it not as bad? Interested in any feedback at all whatsoever? Or give us a call on 0749125000. The Donegal Democrat this morning: sandbags and piles of debris were the only signs left of the deluge that swept through Rafoe on Saturday evening. By Sunday afternoon, there's a palpable sense of relief that the rain had stopped and that it was business as usual after the previous evening's frantic cleanup at the town's diamond. Local people were coming and going, picking sandbags from the temporary depot and checking in with each other. You can read more about that, of course, on the inside of that paper. On to the Irish Independent this morning. The state will pay for a full cycle of IVF for couples seeking to give birth under a new scheme to be introduced in September. The programme will be available to couples who do not have children and where the woman is under 41 years old. What do you think about that, the age, the upper age limit being 41? It's not just that, though. Along with the age limit, there are also criteria around the body mass index of women applying to the scheme. So they will be able to apply, but and there's another criteria too, which is really quite confusing compared to international best practice. A, you must be under 41, and B, you must have a certain BMI level, or certainly not be above a certain BMI level. Couples who have a known clinical cause of infertility will also miss out. Couples who have a known clinical cause of infertility will also miss out on the free IVF program. The criteria for access to the scheme were recommended by a working group of clinical experts. I actually thought it was couples who have an unknown clinical cause of infertility will miss out. I must get that double checked here. I hope it's not a misprint in the paper this morning. But anyway, the criteria for access to the scheme were recommended by a working group of clinical experts. Health Minister Stephen Donnelly secured $10 million for the scheme in last September's budget and is expected to seek around $30 million to continue the programme into the new year. As I say, just hold off on any opinion as it relates to the known clinical cause of infertility, because as I say, that doesn't make sense. I would imagine it's an unknown one, because that's where the problem lies. For about 25% of couples, the cause of infertility is unknown. And if you haven't been able to conceive for 2 years in other countries, then you can normally go through a state-backed scheme. As I say, I'll double check that. It could be a misprint in that paper, because I think it's an important clarification. But we have been speaking about that over the years, as you regular listeners would be aware. So we'll have get someone in the know to see whether or not they believe it goes far enough. The Irish Times, as night follows day, Extra Gardaí follows national newspaper and radio and TV coverage. And as predicted, dozens of additional officers are to be assigned to Garda stations in north and south central Dublin within 2 weeks, Assistant Commissioner Angela Willis has said. Now, it's the capital. It's where a lot of people come to visit. I get it. It needs to be safe. But we up here in the northwest are constantly saying we've got this particular problem. We've got these unique geographical challenges. We need more Gardaí. We say it. Politicians say it. Chief Garda in the county say it. And nothing comes of it, even when we have massive drugs being found on our shores horrific murder recently, people being stabbed and fighting in broad daylight, no extra resources. But as soon as there's a... And this sounds incredibly insensitive to the tourist that was attacked, and I don't mean to be in any way insensitive, but as I say, last week, as soon as night, as sure as night follows day, as soon as it started getting the media coverage, all of a sudden extra Gardaí can be found to put into stations in Dublin, and yet places outside of Dublin, nothing, no extra resources, it seems. Well, anyway, Assistant Commissioner Angela Willis was speaking as Drew Harris must be on annual leave. She added that these Gardaí would be deployed on high visibility patrols in an effort to tackle violence and antisocial behaviour in the city. Again, the call has been made locally here in certain areas that we need more high profile Garda presence, but there's no Gardaí available. Then we have to talk about getting cameras because there's no Gardaí available. But now in Dublin, they're going to have extra Gardaí and high visibility patrols, which, as I say, I don't begrudge them that. Don't get me wrong. Of course, it's very important that the capital, it's our capital, that people feel safe in it. It just always seems to be the case that we can bang drums here till we're blue in the face and nothing comes of it. And as soon as it's on the front pages in Dublin, all of a sudden the Gardaí are available. Ms. Willis, who is in charge of policing in the capital, said Garda Commissioner Drew Harris had also promised that the Dublin region would receive a continued flow of new personnel from the Garda College in the months ahead. Speaking at the Dublin City Joint Policing Committee yesterday, Ms. Willis said a recently opened Garda station on O'Connell Street had very, very little, if any, callers after 10 p.m. daily, despite being open until 2 a.m. So, as I say, I've made this observation in the past that unfortunately our policing in this country seems to be reactionary, and it's not the fault of mid-rank Gardaí and regular members. It's the people that make the decisions. They're reacting again rather than being proactive. A bizarre story across many of the papers today. Gardaí are examining, this is the Daily Mail, we'll take it out of. Gardaí are examining if a criminal investigation is necessary after more than €400,000 worth of gold belonging to the National Party was allegedly removed from a vault by two party members. The party leader, Justin Barrett, initially claimed the gold had been stolen and contacted Gardaí in the Dublin 4 region. They posted on their social media saying that they were expelling people from the party and this money had been... this gold had been stolen and the people who they alleged may have been involved in it had control of the social media and all this kind of stuff. Really bizarre as it unfolded. Once contacted, Gardaí from a nearby district detective unit began to investigate and managed to locate the missing gold, which was then returned to a safe location, according to sources familiar with the incident. In a statement, Mr. Barrett accused two men of conspiring together to remove from the party's safe vault in Dublin a considerable quantity in gold, which formed the main part of the party's reserve in the event of a mishap in general, or more particularly, a collapse in the value of flat currency. Now, obviously, you know, it's not unusual for political parties to seek donations. It is a little bit strange, particularly for a political party that has no elected representatives, to be able to convert those donations into gold bars and store them in a safe in their offices in Dublin. It really is quite bizarre. Perhaps even the makings of a Netflix three-parter down the line. How do you buy leaflets and canvas and all that kind of stuff with big gold bars? Well, anyway, Mr. Barrett wrote, "The only safe and secure means of proceeding was to contact the Gardaí. It was, I can assure everyone, an absolute last resort to secure the vaults from the removal to God knows where of the party's property." The party leader continued, "Whatever the motive of the two individuals, I can only speculate and might be sued over such speculation, so I shall refrain." I can't string two words together. Maybe I need coffee or something. I don't know. My mouth must be very dry. But anyway, so it's a really bizarre story. I don't know how it's going to play out, but as I say, story, donations in gold, how do you spend it then on whatever you need to spend it on? The Irish Daily Star today, a story which I presume will come as a surprise to some and send an interesting message out. That's the only way I can describe it without for fear of getting into trouble. But a high-profile Irish celebrity charged with defilement of a minor is to have his passport returned to him next month to allow him travel overseas for 2 weeks. The man in his 40s, who cannot be named for legal reasons, is accused of three charges of engaging in sexual acts with a child under the age of 17 in Dublin on dates between 2010 and early 2011. The man who denies all charges against him is to face a trial which is due to begin on October 9th and is expected to last 5 days. The court previously heard the complainant is now in her late 20s. In a bail variation application at Dublin Circuit Criminal Court yesterday, defence barrister Ian Woodland said the application is for the return of the accused's passport for August 3rd to August 17th. So this person, who is widely known, but on governed media like this, names can't be mentioned, of course, but that this person is widely known. He has been given his passport back to go on holidays in August for 2 weeks, but is facing trial in October for the defilement of a child. It's, as I say, I would say that those that are affected by that, let me put it like that, will be saying, how can such a thing happen? I know people are innocent unproven otherwise, but that being said, it does seem a little bit bizarre to me anyway. The Sun this morning tells us, and this is common sense hopefully now coming to the fore. We talked about this regularly on this show as recently as last Friday. And this is about maybe increasing the role pharmacists might have in healthcare to presumably alleviate pressure on GPs and who's to say, maybe even hospitals. Well, new plans to allow pharmacists to prescribe some medicines are being put in place in Ireland. Health Minister Stephen Donnelly says it will be a welcome move for beleaguered GPs, and Donnelly told how pharmacists would receive additional training. He said, "We'll have very significant additional training, specialist training, a regulatory framework in place. We're working closely with the regulator on this, and a task force that we put together is a very serious group of people, very serious." He said this scheme would only be for certain medicines, adding this would only be done with the pharmacists as part of a multidisciplinary team. And there's lots of little things, and you know them yourself. I don't have to give examples that you're looking for script for that hopefully the pharmacist may be able to prescribe. And finally, in the Irish Daily Mirror this morning, grocery inflation rose by 14.7% in the 12 weeks to July 9 compared with the same period last year. You know, we could be easily hoodwinked into thinking that, you know, oh, milk's come down, bread's coming down, everything's moving in the right direction. But no, 14.7% increase in the cost of your groceries year on year. That's huge. That really is huge. The latest data, which was released by market analyst Kantar, also showed consumers visiting shops more frequently compared with last year. But despite inflation continuing to rise, it was down from last month's figure of 15.8% and the lowest it's been all year. But listen, any fall in inflation, it's hard to welcome a fall in inflation from 15.8% to 14.7% when really what it means is your stuff is still going up by 14.7%. Eimear Healy, Business Development Director of Kantar, said this is the second month in a row there has been a drop in inflation, which is welcome news for shoppers. But we need to see deflation, or we need to see at least inflation running around about 2 or 3%, 14.7% for food, which we need to sustain ourselves and to feed our families, is way, 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 way too high. I don't know why clear savings that they're getting at wholesale level are not being passed down to the consumer. All right, that's a run through of what's making the papers today. We're joined on the programme now by Neil Ford, PRO of the Irish Deer Society. Good morning, Neil. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning to your listeners.
No, it's very good to have you. It's very good to have you with us. Okay, so there has been some commentary locally about deer and the deer population, and we'll work through some of that and also talk about the cull and what impact that might be having. But it was stated here on this programme and elsewhere by a local councillor, Michael McClafferty, that TB's on the rise in his area, maybe in Donegal, and this is down to deer are to blame. So, I mean, is that the case?
Well, it's not borne out by any research that's been carried out. There was a study made of deer in Sligo just a few years ago, and they found no incidence of deer of TB in the deer at all. There is TB in the herd in Wicklow, one of the reasons why that may be prominent there, why it is more likely to be seen there, is due to the density of deer in Wicklow, which is approaching areas in Europe where you have a similar issue, where the very high density of deer, there is an incidence of TB in the deer. But even then, it's very, very low. It's I just had a look at the figures there yesterday. It's 0.7% of the deer are reacting, are showing signs of TB. That, of course, is the deer that have been culled. So, you know, we don't know the overall figure.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's encouraging. Also, there was some claims that Lyme disease, deer are responsible for Lyme disease. I hadn't heard this before. I mean, normally it's ticks that I hear it of, but maybe it's ticks being transported on deer. I don't know. But what's your information in that regard?
Well, you get certain parts of the country. I live here in County Waterford, and I shoot deer on a number of farms and woodland just close by, and there's no ticks on the deer at all. But I have shooting up in the Knockmildown Mountains, which is about 15, 20 miles away, and they're heavily infested with ticks. So you'd always be cautious there with regards to getting a tick on you or getting a tick on one of the dogs. Now, of course, it's the ticks that carry the Lyme disease, not the deer. So you'll get ticks on sheep, you'll get ticks on cattle, you'll get ticks on dogs and cats. So really the thing is to be cautious. One of the reasons for the rise in Lyme disease is because we now recognize it. For many years, people didn't know what it was, and it was put down to brucellosis, flus, persistent flu, and in some cases, it doesn't emerge until many years after the infection has occurred. So the most, if you do get bitten by a tick, this is the advice I would give anybody. There are better qualified people than me to give the advice. But what I would watch straight away for what we call the bullseye mark at the location of the tick bite and get treatment immediately, because doctors are reluctant to give you antibiotics for it, but you should really have it attacked straight away. The longer it's left, the more likely you have to have a problem.
Yeah, and it's something we discuss an awful lot on this program, and you have to be strongly advocate on your own behalf if you have any concerns as it relates to potential Lyme disease. Also, there were calls for the culling early of stags. And also, well, actually, do you know what? Rather than just go through bit by bit, let's talk generally speaking. We still don't know. We still don't have a census of how many deer we have, do we? I mean, we have anecdotal, oh, there's loads of them, there's this, that, and that, but we still actually really don't know how many deer we have, which I think is a remarkable position to find ourselves in.
Yeah, we have no real idea how many deer we have in the country. We haven't even a rough idea. The UK thinks that the population there has risen from 1.1 million to 2 million in the period during COVID due to an absence of any culling at all. But once you get to a certain position with deer numbers, they expand exponentially in population. And you get to a certain point on that graph, and beyond that, it's nearly impossible to control them. We need to know how many deer we have, and we need to know how many deer we need to cull. So you see figures of, I saw one politician stating a figure of 70% of the deer should be culled. Well, 70% of what? We don't know what the numbers are. How do we know when we've culled 70%? And there's a right way and a wrong way to do it. Because if you look at a farmer with a large dairy herd, he does have to take out some of the older cows. He's got to sell them on. He's got to bring on young stock. He doesn't keep all his young stock. He sells some of it. We won't go into what happens to the male calves, but that's been well covered over the last week or so. But it's managed, and that's what we need to do with the deer herd. We need to manage the deer herd properly, and we haven't done that. And everybody is to blame. You can't say, as a stalker, I can't say it's Queen Tour, it's the government or whoever. It's everybody. Stalkers themselves are more inclined. They're paying money to shoot on quieter land. They want to shoot a buck. They want to shoot a stag. They want to shoot something big that they can bring home and say, look what I've done. When in actual fact, we should be shooting does. We should be shooting the young bucks. We should be taking out quite a large number of the young bucks.
Should we be removing the sport out of it? I mean, should we be removing the sport out of it? Should this not be something that is done in an incredibly organised way? I mean, we've had tens of thousands of deer culled, but we don't really know if it's the right deer, what type of deer, what impact that might have. And people are out doing it for recreation as well, to, you know, as sport. So do we not need to look at this and say, right, properly plan it out and do it in a more organised fashion?
Well, there, at the moment, there's very intensive discussions going on, led by Teddy Cashman of the IFA, into a deer management forum, when we're looking at all of these issues, looking at all the various issues of whether there are sufficient stalkers, whether we need professional stalkers, how we should proceed, what we need to do. Immediately, the most immediate result before that forum comes to any conclusions is stalkers on the ground need to shoot more does. And one of the ways for the local farming community to help themselves is to form deer management units or farming clusters, because you've got different types of stalker. You've got the really serious guy that will put effort into it. And then you've got the butterfly stalker who go from farm to farm and just shoot the odd deer here and there during the season, and he's happy. And you want somebody who's going to do the job. And for that to happen, you get a group of farmers in an area, identify how many deer you have, get a cull plan in place, and tell that stalker, we want you to shoot one buck and 10 does, or three bucks and 30 does. And if you can't do it, we'll get somebody else.
There are other factors here, though, at play, isn't there? It's not simply just how and where they're culled. It's how they're managed, not just how they're managed, but how the environment that they live in is managed.
Yeah, if you can't see them, you can't shoot them, and you can't count them. What happened in the UK, we're unfortunately repeating what they've done in the UK here. They had big blocks of forestry. They were right to the boundaries of the next-door neighbour, if you like. There was no such thing as a deer lawn or little inserts or little areas that you could leave in the wood to allow a stalker to control deer in that forestry. And once deer find they're not under any pressure, well, that's where they're going to go. And we need to redesign how we do forestry. There are farmers, and that's up to them, but they don't want any shooting on their land, maybe for ethical reasons, whatever the reason. But what I would say to those individuals, there are people who you can bring in just for a very brief period to cull deer on your land. But it isn't fair on your neighbours if you allow large populations of deer to have a sanctuary, if you like, on your property. So
we have thousands of deer culled. Is it 2,000, just shy of 2,000 in Donegal in the last 12 months? We don't really know, do we? If the truth be told, we don't really know if that will have any impact whatsoever on population numbers. We don't know what.
Well, if most of them are bucks, and I suspect not bucks but stags.
In other words, with the antlers, mainly, whatever they're called.
Mainly red deer. Stags in red, bucks in seeker and fallow. And if you're shooting mainly bucks, the males, let's leave it at males. If you're just shooting males, you are not going to affect the population at all.
Because you only need one male, presumably, to impregnate many, many does.
Up to 50 does, yeah. Whereas if you have 50 males and 50 does, you'll still have the same number of fawns at the end of the year. So we really have to concentrate on the does, but in a humane and ethical manner.
That's why I don't see anything humane or ethical about people shooting these animals for sport from a distance. Maybe not shooting them in the right area, maybe injuring them and then moving forward to finish the job. It just doesn't seem to me to be, why don't we, as I say, sorry, but to repeat myself, in an organised fashion with professionals in a regulated way that we know is fair, and as fair as is possible when you're taking the life of a big creature like this. And again, even maybe supplementing the food chain or making industry out of it or something. I mean, they're there. I think most people, 80-odd% of people, realise that we have to control these numbers. It's just the idea of people going out, instead of going out for a game of golf, going out to shoot these animals. And there's no real oversight, as we don't know which of the animals they're shooting. That's just haphazard to me. It doesn't seem right.
Well, it's That's a whole new debate about whether or not people should be stalking deer at all. But at the moment, that is the only method we have. There are no other methods available to control the numbers. Now, as you say, you could bring in an expert, but an expert has to learn. And that's the problem. When a surgeon does an operation, you know, first couple of times, maybe he kills the patient. So that's
yeah, but I mean, at the very least, if we're giving people licenses to do this, okay, and 1,900 deer are shot in Donegal, do we have no documentation where that person, obviously they return the figures because we have an overall amount, that they give us a breakdown of what they shot and where? I mean, do we even have access to that information? Because me and you were speculating here at the moment. It feels like that anyway.
Yeah, every stalker with a license has to make a return at the end of the year. Now, how honest they are with regards to that return or how accurate they are, that's down to the individual. I don't see any follow-up by the department at any stage to audit a stalker. So I think there's definitely room for improvement there. The other side of it then is we have introduced a training system that was done voluntarily first, and now it has become compulsory for a new permit holder to have carried out a training scheme under there's three bodies doing it, and it's referred to the Hunter Competency Assessment Program. And that particular training scheme looks at their accuracy, how accurate are they, how good a shot they are, teaches them about safety of shooting, teaches them about the deer, and teaches them about the risks. And at that level, we see they can shoot. Once we can see they can they shoot a deer? A lot of people, there's a thing referred to as buck fever, where people get the shakes when they get a deer in front of them. But they're likely to miss it altogether when that's the case.
Okay. Thanks very much for that, Neil. Again, it's a conversation we need to have, and some, you know, it needs to be done at the highest levels as well to come up with some sort of a proper solution. But I think you wanted to make sure too that if information is being put out into the public domain, that it's on the money, so to speak.
There will be more information coming in the future now once this deer management forum has completed its work. So okay. I would hope that the public will be educated further on in that case.
We'll watch with interest. That is Neil Ford, PRO of the Irish Deer Society. A couple of quick comments coming in. Tag deer that go for the abattoirs for processing to get a real idea of numbers and to stop poaching. Another, far too many deer causing a lot of accidents on the roads, and they are breeding and getting more plentiful indeed, which it makes it more important that if we are culling them and if we are doing it in the fashion in which we are now, that we make sure it's the right deer, does that you, that's how you control it. There's no point, as we heard from Neil there, if you've got 50 stags and 50 does, and you shoot 49 stags, you're still going to have the same amount of calves from the does, so you have to manage that in a certain way. So unfortunately, it's an awful thing to, I feel it's an awful thing to say, it's the does you have to go for because it's they that birth. Now we have on the program Sinead. Thanks so much for joining us this morning on what must be an incredibly difficult time for you.
Yes, it is.
All right, Sinead, your partner Greg from Galway. Are you both from Galway up visiting this part of the world?
No, I'm from Liverpool. Greg's from Galway, but he lives in Liverpool. And we stayed in Galway for a few nights, and then we've been in Fannad. We got to Fannad on Saturday, and then we were due to leave yesterday, but obviously we're still here.
And tell us when you last seen Greg King. We have a picture of him for those watching the stream. There's a picture of him here, and we want everyone to have a look at that picture or go to our website and have a close look at that picture. He's distinctive enough looking because he is missing, and that's the purpose of this conversation. But just have a look at that image and see search your mind to see if you've seen Greg recently. When was the last time you seen him, and what was the nature of his disappearance?
The last time I saw him, we'd been in the Fannad Lodge on Sunday to watch the hurling final, and we'd stayed there for the whole night. So I'd last saw him about, it must have been about quarter to midnight. I left to go home. And I walked on the road. So the road, when you come out, you walk sort of straight on and then left. Greg had noticed that I'd left. He was still there with my parents. And he came out and rang me and said, you know, he was going to catch up with me. And then we had a conversation for 15 minutes. So as far as I was aware, Greg was behind, which I had no reason to doubt. And then that's the last time I've spoken to him, was on the phone. And then shortly after that, when he didn't come along the path, I realised that something was wrong. And basically I've been looking for him ever since.
Okay, Sinead, I know this is very difficult for you, but hopefully now we get a positive outcome. Was there anything about Greg on the evening that would indicate that he, you know, want to disappear, or anything as you reflect on that might indicate why he might want some time to himself for a period, or anything like that at all?
It's a really important question. In this instance, absolutely not. I think the thing that really sticks to my mind is important to remember is the reason that Greg left was because he wanted to come and see me. And that's because of the nature of Greg. He is like a very caring person. And he would have left to come and catch me up because he has been worried about me walking on that road by myself. Even though, you know, I was completely comfortable with it. That was why he asked us to come and see me. And he told me that when I spoke to him, that he was going to come and catch up with me. So, yeah, I've got absolutely no reason to believe that there would have been any other reason for it other than that.
And in terms of his mobile phone, does he have a mobile phone? Did it or does it continue to ring? Is there any possibility of, you know, using something like Find My Phone or anything like that there? Presumably it would be with him if he has one.
Yeah, so basically, Greg doesn't have an iPhone and his phone doesn't have Find My Phone on it. Mm. And unfortunately, one of the other really alarming things is that after I'd spoken to Greg, I wasn't able to get hold of him. So I spoke to him initially for those 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then I phoned him again, but For the duration of that call, his phone must have been in his pocket because there was sort of like the key tones of the phone. So it sounds like he was running, which made sense to me because Greg was like an athletic, he's a fit man. So that would make perfect sense to me that Greg would have been running on the road behind to catch up.
Okay. So it's an Android phone he has, Sinead, is it?
Yeah.
Right.
It's called an Oppo phone.
Yeah, but you do know if it's linked to a Google account, you can sign in. If you were able to sign into his Google, and it can still identify when it was last pinging. So hopefully the authorities are looking into that as well. It's not a specific app. But
they are.
Okay, excellent. Okay, that's good.
Yeah, they are looking into
it. And as you say, he's healthy and fit. And there was no reason as to why he might go missing, and he has been missing now for quite some time. So what do you think has happened? Do you think he strayed off the road, or he might have become confused, or what, Sinead? Because there's no clear indication as to what might or could have happened to him.
Yeah, and I think another really alarming thing about it is even though Greg hasn't been to this part many times, that very day we'd walked to Fanavolta Church to go to Mass, we'd walked back, so both of them, you know, was in that route past the Fanad Lodge, so we'd done that twice together, and then we also walked to the Fanad Lodge together, so he'd walked that path three times on that day, and he has a really good sort of like sense of navigation in general. So that's just like, so the difficulty I've got is I don't know where he's gone. Now, when I spoke to him on the 15-minute phone call, he did say to me, which stuck out to me at the time, he said that he was in a field. So, of course, I said to him, why are you in a field? You know, it's a road. Like, you don't need to be in the field, you need to be on the road.
Mm.
And pretty quickly, he then said to me that he was on the road. Now, looking back on that, I don't know if Greg was just saying that to humour me, because he probably didn't want me to just keep going on about, oh, Greg got on the road, or make a fuss and, you know, come back or anything like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's probably.
But even if he did stray off, even if he did stray off the road and became lost, you would hope that once daylight broke, because of who he is and his health and everything, that he'd very quickly, you know, get his coordination about him and then get home.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, obviously the sort of, as the time's gone on, you know, at first I thought, although I did have the initial thought that something had happened, because, you know, I went out looking for him straight away. My parents' friend who drove them home from the Swanwick Lodge, so there was a very small window where I hadn't spoken to Greg before I was out looking for him. It was probably, I would say, maybe like 20 minutes to 30 minutes at the most.
Mm-hmm.
And then Brendan drove me and we went for a search. So that's another thing, is like, I know he wasn't on the road at that time because we looked everywhere. So it's just really difficult to sort of to know where he was. What we do know is there is CCTV on the road that leads to where we were staying.
Yeah.
Now on that CCTV, you see me walking past, and then you see Brendan driving my parents there, but you don't see Greg. So I know for a fact that he didn't go. So I know with certainty that he was not on the road that he should have been on.
Right, so he did not take that path he'd trod before. He did not go in the direction to the accommodation.
No.
I mean, is there any part of you that suspects foul play here, Sinead?
Foul play is in.
That some harm came to him, a third party might be involved, or.
No, because, like, you obviously in this situation, you just rack your brains.
Mm.
And to be honest, the only thing that I thought could have been a possibility when I was going through every single scenario is, you know, has he been hit by a car? Mm. That was the thing I was worried about. But there's absolutely no trace of that. And also, I didn't see any cars on the road when I was walking.
Yes.
And then when I went out with Brendan to look, I think we only saw maybe one car that whole time.
Yeah.
Okay. So no, in terms of foul play, I mean, I couldn't even. It's not something I've even considered, because for a start, he doesn't know anyone here.
Understood.
So it's like,
now, Sinead, we were on to the Gardaí nationally, and this is not, they have not claimed, that they're not stating this as a missing persons. They say that they haven't been notified of it. Now, on Garda Síochána from Dublin would issue maybe 3-4 missing persons appeals a day. Do you know why that might be, and what are all resources that normally are available in a missing persons case, i.e., you know, the Rescue 118 helicopter, you know, whatever mountain rescues or whatever is applicable, mm-hmm. are all those services mm-hmm. actively seeking out Greg King at the moment?
Yeah. So, I mean, that I didn't know that he's not been listed for a missing person. I mean, I'll have to pick that up after.
Please do, because just on the off chance he got confused, he's in Galway. You know, I mean, I know for a fact Galway Bay FM would be running this story if they were given it, and you just never know. That's why, Sinead, I was a little bit concerned when the guards didn't state he was a missing person. So maybe just follow that up.
I don't know how it works here, but I think in England it's like after 24 hours. I will follow it up with them, because that's really important. But in terms of resources, so we've had last night, we've had the helicopter out, Scotland, and some half Irish coastline.
Okay, very good.
The scars have been here. Like, I do feel like, you know, at the moment that resources are being used. And the only thing I really must say is the local people have really rallied behind us.
Yeah.
And it's been really special. And it's been so appreciated by me and Greg's family. It's just been unbelievable. Everyone has helped us. Yeah. And we just desperate for people to keep helping us with the search.
Check land, check out buildings. If you've got a drone, yeah, get it up. Just keep your eye. And it could be over a distance as well, not just in that local area. Sinead, mm-hmm. most mm-hmm. times there's a positive outcome to missing persons. I hope it's the case in your case and that you and Greg are reunited really, really soon. I appreciate in very difficult circumstances you're helping us to get the message out here across the Northwest. And we, as I say, we've got the image on our social media, on our website, and the image is also on this live stream that we have of the show. So hopefully people have a look at that picture, and if they've spotted him anywhere, to get in contact with Gardaí straight away. Our fingers are crossed, Sinead, and I really hope there's a positive outcome to this, and you're incredibly brave to be able to speak publicly and at this very, very difficult time. So we're thinking on you, all right, and we just hope there's a really positive outcome soon.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, Sinead, let us know if there's anything further we can do, will you? Okay, Sinead there. John McAteer is editor of the Tyrconnell Tribune. Heartbreaking story there, John. And it is a mystery, particularly considering that Greg didn't take the route that Sinead was expected him to. They had that long conversation, 15 minutes on the phone. He said he was in a field and then he said he was on the road, which has led Sinead to believe that, you know, maybe he had strayed off the beaten path and was just saying he was on the road to reassure her. But what else could you add, John? And talk to us about the search and where the search might be taking place, and I suppose the lay of the land.
The lay of the land there is a well-known road across Trialloch beside the football pitches there in Kinnaloch. Anybody on the road to Fannet Head Lighthouse, it is one of the it is one of the better known roads in Dublin, or in this part of the world. It is also sort of almost a straight line from where they left the Fannet Lodge to where they were staying. It would have been very hard to sort of go off the beaten track. But then if you weren't familiar with the area and it was dark at night, there are different permutations. You could have turned left, which would have taken you towards Tamney, Rosnakill. Down at the junction where he would have went towards, we would have expected, there's another road that goes off towards Turnban and towards a different part of the country. He would have been taking the road directly across Trialloch. A lot of sand dunes on one side. There's a Neilburn caravan park there. There's access to the beach there. And further on again, past the community centre and the football grounds, there's another access road. There are several access roads if you strayed off. The fact that they were talking together and that she presumed that he was probably 5 minutes behind her was probably reassuring Sinead that everything was fine, because they often went walking together. They had a passion for walking, and he was a very fit man. And it's just mystifying. It's just a total mystery, because I was down there at the Fannet Lodge last night at midnight, and the numbers of people there who had just come back from searching, the local people, huge numbers of them, the emergency service, the Gardaí, and the whole lot of them, and especially a big group of people on quads who know the terrain. They had searched high up and low down all evening and came up with nothing. The Gardaí had shot out the CCTV leads, the one at the day centre at Trialloch. She would have been about more than a third of the way home at that mm-hmm. point. But as she said there, the CCTV picks her up, but he never materialised. So he was obviously not on that road, or else he had strayed off it.
Is there an obvious... would you expect, given the resources that have been thrown at this so far, if he had strayed off the road, and given the local knowledge of those involved in the search, would you have expected him to have been found at this point? Or does it not surprise you that, given how much land there is to cover, I suppose, that he still hasn't been found?
I would have to confess that I'd be worried at this point that he hasn't been found, because there's a pretty big search coordinated there yesterday by local people. The emergency services are out for the last numbers of hours. They're waiting for the rescue helicopter to sweep the area again, as it did last night. It's sparsely populated. There aren't many places that you would go. There aren't many farmyards or sheds or outhouses on that road. Mm-hmm. I mean, people will know that road very, very well. It's pretty close to Rinmore Beach and Ballyheernan, and there's that strip of grazing and the sand dunes. Now, whether he ended up down there, whether he took a different route, CCTV footage at Tamney has been checked. There's no sign of him there. And, you know, you're well in now to 36 hours. He was wearing a T-shirt and running shorts. Weather conditions would be a concern at night, because I would have been out walking on Sunday night just around that time myself, mm-hmm. and sharp northerly breeze in it. And hopefully, as you said there to Sinead, that all will end well and that they can be reunited. But with every passing hour, fears continue to mount and grow, and concerns about its whereabouts. But there's a major search on there today. All of the emergency services have thrown their full might at it. And let us hope that throughout the day that something will emerge, that they will find him. It's as simple as just hoping for the best at this point, really.
John, as always, thank you so much, and thanks for your insight there. I really do appreciate it. That's John McAteer of the Tyrconnell Tribune. And we just hope that Greg King is found safe and well as soon as is possible. He was last seen at midnight, that's Sunday night, Monday morning, in the Trialloch area of Fannad, and they're appealing for anyone who's in that area. If you've got an outhouse, maybe he sought shelter there. He could have took a knock to the head and is disorientated. You know what I mean? So there's loads of options, but this is a critical period of time now for everyone, if they have the ability or they're in that area, to have a look, to see if they can find Greg on their property or in their sheds or outhouses or whatever it might be. And of course, he may have gone further afield. That can't be ruled out either. His picture, as I say, is on the stream as we speak right now, but it's also available on our social media and our website. And I just really hope, as I say, that Greg and Sinead are reunited shortly. Okay, we are going to take a break for the news and the obituary notices. After that, it's Community Guard information.